Hey, good evening, everybody. I'd like to welcome everyone to the Simple Actions Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is David, and I'm an alcoholic.
Amen.
For those who care to join us, let's open this meeting with a moment of silence to do with as you wish, followed by the Serenity Prayer. God,
grant me to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Amen. Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively that are across the main foyer and up a small flight of stairs. At this time, please silence your cell phones.
Yes.
Also, we respectfully ask those present to please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA's simple actions. These actions are contained in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA's simple actions. I will now read the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other, that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and to help other alcoholics achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. Tonight, we are talking about step two. And if you would, can we welcome our panel this weekend? We've got Jim and Adita.
Stand up and take a bow.
I'm not going to read you to death, but we're going to read. We'll read a paragraph out of the book, and then each of the people on the panel will share for a few minutes on each reading. And that's our program for the evening. So, hello, Iran. Step two says, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. We're going to start tonight on page 44. In the preceding chapters, you have learned something of alcoholism. We hope we have made clear the distinction between the alcoholic and the non-alcoholic. If, when you honestly want to, you find you cannot quit entirely, or if, when drinking, you have little control over the amount you take, you're probably alcoholic. If that be the case, you may be suffering from an illness which only a spiritual experience will conquer. To one who feels he is an atheist or agnostic, such an experience seems impossible. But to continue as he is means disaster, especially if he's an alcoholic of the hopeless variety. To be doomed to an alcoholic death or to live on a spiritual basis are not always easy alternatives to face. But it isn't so difficult. About half of our original membership were of exactly that type. At first, some of us tried to avoid the issue, hoping against hope we are not true alcoholics. But after a while, we had to face the fact that we must find a spiritual basis of life or else. Perhaps it's going to be that way with you. But cheer up. Something like half of us thought we were atheists or agnostics. Our experience shows that you need not be disconcerted. If a mere code of morals or a better philosophy of life were sufficient to overcome alcoholism, many of us would have recovered a long time ago. But we found that such codes and philosophies did not save us. No matter how much we tried, we could wish to be moral. We could wish to be philosophically comforted. In fact, we could will these things with all our might, but the needed power wasn't there. Our human resources, as marshaled by the will, were insufficient. They failed utterly. Lack of power, that was our dilemma. We had to find a power by which we could live, and it had to be a power greater than ourselves, obviously, but where and how to find that power? Well, that's exactly what this book is about. Its main object is to enable you to find a power greater than yourself, which will solve your problem. Adita?
Hey, my name's Adita. I'm an alcoholic. let's see. My sobriety date is 8/27/12. I have a home group, which is Larchmont 12 and 12, which meets at 8 p.m. After this, you can rush over there. It's okay to be late. We'll still welcome you. And I have a sponsor. He's very close to me, physically right now.
That's not me.
And I sponsor other guys. So there's a lot that we just read. There's a lot in there. I love the fact that a lot of times the book will present the problem and the answer like right back to back to me. And the problem being like, I can't quit when I want to, and I can't control the amount I want to take. Because I quit a bunch of times, and like in the last 2 years of my drinking, I quit for 7 days, 21 days, 46 days, and 100 days. And I know this because it was really hard. And like, I couldn't stay stopped though. And that was all on my own without this program. And then like controlling my drinking, if I was gonna drink the way I wanted, it was gonna be an uncontrolled way. And if I had to control it, I was gonna be miserable. And you know, there's plenty of evidence from my drinking career where I can look back and see that. But I love the fact that right after they tell me that's my problem, that I can't get over that, it says, well, I'm suffering from an illness from which only a spiritual experience will conquer. There's my solution back to back. I love that. And I remember there's this line here, to be doomed to an alcoholic death or to live on a spiritual basis are not always easy alternatives to face, but those are the only two choices we're given. And I remember being in this room. This is one of the rooms I feel like I grew up in. I remember sitting in the back early on in recovery, and a dude sitting right up here reading these very words says, that's it, those are the only two doors you have to walk through. And but there is no third door. And he's looked for third doors and he couldn't find one, but he always came back to this idea that there was just these two doors. And I remember like going up to that guy afterwards, and like over the next week or so, like him and I hung out and talked. And I remember sitting at the footbridge over here in Ghent, talking to him about this, and him being like, you know, that's it. Those are your two choices. You can look for that third door, but you're not going to find it. Now, fast forward. Over the next 5 years, I looked for that third door in sobriety, whether that was, you know, women, cars, job, yoga, a therapist, running, diet, whatever. Like, I found other things to obsess over, and every time I came back to this, there's only these two solutions, that's it. I'm either gonna drink again, or I'm gonna do this program. And it was last year when I came up to David outside of a meeting, and I was like, that's it, man, I give up. This is it. These are the only two choices I have. And I love the fact that it's laid out like that, and I'll say the same thing that dude said years ago. That's it. There's two doors. But be my guest. Look for that third, you know, if you need to. I also love when it gives me this idea that, like, David read it pretty calmly, where it says, we must find a spiritual basis of life or else. It seems like very daunting, you know, but right after that it says, but cheer up. And because it already realizes that I'm going to come at this like God, that's it. Like, you know, it already knows that that's the way I'm approaching this. And then this idea that, a few points in this book, you got these one-word sentences, and I love that. We had to find a power by which we could live, and it had to be a power greater than ourselves, obviously. That's it. It's just more obviously. But where and how are we to find this power? That's exactly what this book is about. Up until now, I thought it was about quitting drinking, but now it's telling me that this is actually about finding a power greater than myself. And that's what this whole thing is going to be about. That's pretty cool. And when I find that, that's going to help me solve my problem. That's cool. And what I found in my personal experience is that it's not only helped me solve my alcohol problem, but finding that power greater than myself has given me the strength to face all my problems, which is pretty awesome. So I could talk a lot about this segment, but I'll pass.
Go ahead. Keep talking.
No, I'm done.
Thanks, Abita.
I'm Jim. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Jim.
And I guess my sobriety date, July the 25th, 1971. I got to start pretty much from the beginning, I guess, because I saw step two before I ever read it and heard about it. And first three steps, in fact. My last drunk, I was on active duty at the time. And after my last drunk, I ended up in a psych ward at Portsmouth Naval Hospital. And they kept me for about 10 days, decided I was beyond their help, and they shipped me out. And I'll tell you what, if you've never felt rejection, get kicked out of a psych ward sometime. When they don't want you, nobody wants you. Anyway, I ended up in Philadelphia. And somebody asked me a couple of times if I tried AA, and I said, nah. And, you know, it won't work. Cause I didn't know anything about AA. It wasn't very popular back then. And I got up in Philly, and the first day I was off the lock ward onto the open ward, the first evening I got invited to an AA meeting over the phone. And I thought, well, I'll go to this meeting, and then if he asks me again if I tried AA, I can tell him I tried it and it don't work. And I walked in there, and there was about, I don't know, 5, 6, 7 people there, I guess. And they were sober. And they told their story. And I knew what I was. I mean, I had a hard time convincing my psychiatrist I was an alcoholic, but I knew that before I got in the hospital. But I didn't know a way out until they started talking and telling about their drinking. And at first I thought, you know, these people are crazier than I am, and I'm locked up, and they're walking free. But the thing was, they were sober, and they looked happy, decently happy. And I was sober, but I was miserable. And by the time I left there, like I said, I knew before I got there I was an alcoholic. But they showed me that there was a way out. And a lot of people, I think, are, you know, they focus on the insanity part of step two. Excuse me. I focused on the hope. That's what I got listening to those people. I never heard of step two. I don't know if they read it in the beginning of the meeting or not. But I could see that they were sober and I wasn't. And they were enjoying it and I wasn't. And whatever they had, I was willing to try, give it a try. And the next day, it took me a while. I had a session with my psychiatrist, told him where I was, I was an alcoholic. Told him I'd been to an AA meeting. He says, how'd you get out of the hospital? And I said, I didn't. I was right across the hall. And he says, well, it must be something new. I said, I don't know. I just went last night. Turns out I was there 11 years every Monday night. He'd never heard of it. But anyway. My point AA, step two, the whole part of it, it boiled down to one word, and that's hope. That I could see from there that they were sober and that if I did what they did, I could stay sober. And maybe salvage what little bit was left of my career. Thank you.
All right. We're going to continue on page 46. Much to our relief, we discovered we did not need to consider another's conception of God. Our own conception, however inadequate, was sufficient to make the approach and to effect a contact with him. As soon as we admitted the possible existence of a creative intelligence, a spirit of the universe underlying the totality of things, we began to be possessed of a new sense of power and direction, provided we took other simple steps. We found that God does not make too hard of terms with those who seek him. To us, the realm of the spirit is broad, roomy, all-inclusive, never exclusive or forbidding to those who earnestly seek. It is open, we believe, to all men. Adita?
All right. I always feel like I have to be like, my name's Adita, I'm an alcoholic, but I don't know, I guess I don't have to keep doing that, but
do whatever you want.
Know, I'll do what I want because I'm an alcoholic. You know how you get humbled in this program? You do these steps and all that, but you really get humbled when you sit down next to somebody that's been sober longer than you've been alive. I feel like I should just shut up and let him talk.
Please don't.
Let's see. I like about this paragraph that the words creative intelligence, spirit of the universe, realm of spirit are all used in the same way as God, because I feel like the word God is like I came in with a certain connotation or idea of what God was. And when I get to this segment and it's talking about creating my own conception, that's really hard for me to do because I've got all these ideas associated with that word already. So when it gives me these other ways of looking at it, like I like to use personally spirit of the universe, suggested from this. And that's been helpful for me in developing that relationship. Something I liked in these last couple sentences and something I've been thinking about here recently is we found that God does not make too hard terms with those who seek him. That word seek is in there. And then after that, we're also talking about the realm of spirit is broad, roomy, all-inclusive, never exclusive or forbidding to those who earnestly seek. And I found here recently, like, it's in the seeking that I get my peace of mind. It's when I'm constantly in that search and that seeking that I'm able to flow through life in a peaceful way, because I'm never going to find that idea of God or understand it or know it completely. But when I'm seeking God in my life or this idea of the spirit of the universe, all the other stuff that's going on in my life just isn't as big of an issue. I have that awareness of me not being the one in control of all of this, and maybe there's something bigger that I should be seeking, I guess. And in doing that, I get that peace of mind that I've always wanted, that I didn't have when I was drinking, certainly. And that's it.
You sure?
Yeah, that's it.
I don't know where to start. I thought I was an agnostic, but I got, you know, when I got sober and I got real and a little bit honest, I found out I was just an apostate. I just gave up. And I figured as long as I said I didn't believe in God, then he couldn't touch me for all the dirty deeds I'd been doing. You know, I'm an alcoholic. I mean, don't expect logic, you know, smarts. Anyway, when I convinced the psychiatrist I was an alcoholic and not just a common nut like the rest of them, he found out that the Navy had a place on the West Coast somewhere that was doing good things with alcoholics. And asked if I wanted to go there. And I said, yeah, you know, anything, get out of here. I'll go to the West Coast. So he got me a set of orders out to Long Beach. And they taught me how to go to meetings. Don't get me wrong. You know, the treatment, it was great. I learned a lot about AA and about alcoholism, and they taught me how to go to meetings and then told me what to do when I got out. And I left there with a set of temporary orders to a new base in New England. Got up there and did what they told me. It was Sunday night. I got checked into the barracks. Got the phone book, called number out of AA. Got a hold of a guy and told him where I was, who I was, and you know, looking for some meetings. And he says, where'd you say you were? And I told him, and he says, geez, buddy, he says, there's no meetings anywhere near there. And I heard him going through his papers, and he says, I got some more good news. I'm not even showing any sober alcoholics out there. There may be some, but I don't know about them. I said, and I started to panic. I said, what am I supposed to do? I don't want to drink. You know, man, it put me in a hospital in the nut ward. I don't want to go back there. And he says, you have a higher power. Or do you have a big book? I said, yeah, I got a big book. He said, do you have a higher power? I said, I'm not too sure about that yet. Mm. He said, well, if you use your big book and my higher power, you'll be all right. Mm. I said, well, you know, what the heck? People have been telling me the truth this long. Why should he lie? So I did that. I used his higher power, and it worked. To start with, the 6 months I was supposed to be there, it was reduced to 2, and I was sent back down to Oceana. But in those 2 months, once I realized, he said, use the big book, not read it. Use it. There's a difference. Yeah. I heard a lady say one time on a tape, you can starve to death reading a cookbook. You know, I can memorize that big book, but unless I do what it says to do, it's no good. It's nothing. So anyway, I started using this guy's higher power, and it worked, and it's still working. I have no idea to this day who I'm praying to, what I'm praying to. Male, female, undecided, I don't know. I don't care. How can you put a gender on a spirit, right? You know, a spirit's a spirit. All I know is whatever it is, it works. And you've all heard the saying, if it works, don't fix it. You know, I'm not going to mess with it. It's been working this almost, you know, 48 years. I think if I live another 48, it'll work those 48 too. That's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you. I've heard Jim tell that story a bunch of times. There's a bunch of things I love about it. But I used to, when you would tell it, I would imagine you like somewhere where there was just igloos and like thousands of miles of ice, you know? It's like, where was that? And he's like, Connecticut.
I was in Rhode Island.
Rhode Island. I thought it was Antarctica.
It was cold.
Okay, I'll stop talking. Page 47. We needed to ask ourselves but one short question. Do I now believe, or am I even willing to believe, that there is a power greater than myself? As soon as a man can say that he does believe or is willing to believe, we emphatically assure him that he is on his way. It has been repeatedly proven among us that upon this simple cornerstone, a wonderfully effective spiritual structure can be built. Adina?
That question, do I now believe, or am I willing to believe, that there's a power greater than myself? I didn't realize that other humans even existed when I came in here. Like, really, I didn't really recognize that the people in my life have their own ideas, emotions, dreams, thoughts, you know, of their own, and have interests. You know, everything centered around me, and I was running the show, and everything was for me to manipulate, and in order to get the greatest good that I could, and that was how I lived my life. to have, and yet I'm miserable, because sometimes I get everything I want, you know, and I'm still miserable. externally, at the end of my drinking, if somebody were looking in, if friends were looking in, it looked and appeared totally fine. I had my own place, you know, had a business and a car and girlfriend. Everything's just looking fine, right? But the girls left me like 3 times. I can't afford the place I'm living. My sister has to help pay for that. My business is going bankrupt, and I'm selling everything out of my house on Craigslist for drinking money. But externally, I got this. You know, like I'm telling everybody, I got this. So, you know, I had that feeling that I can handle everything. So to come to this idea that there might be a power greater than myself, and I don't really get to run this show, and stuff is happening whether I want it to or not, was really, it wasn't actually that hard after because I was so broken down at that point that I was willing to try and believe and understand that there might be something outside of myself. but that the idea of it being a God or a spirit of the universe was still very difficult. So that power for me was this room, like this was something I could believe in, that this will be here next week and that coffee will be made and there'll be 2 other folks sitting up here talking. There was one time there was some sort of power outage, and I guess it didn't happen, but it did because it ended up at the hospital across the street. So I always feel like a little hesitant to say that you can use AA as a power greater than yourself, because like this meeting will be here next week, because there was another time on Friday night, that meeting, I said that, and the next week the person with the key didn't show up. And so, sometimes it doesn't. But the idea is still there. Once I could actually take this program as being a power greater than myself, that was something tangible, something I could always fall back on. Because even through my time in sobriety, like there's been times when I feel spiritually connected and that's going really well in my life, and there's times where I'm not connected in any way at all, but I know when that happens, boom, all I gotta do is come to a meeting and I'm connected by being here with all of you, and it's like a tangible power greater than myself, and it's one I always fall back on, and based on that I've built the rest of this program for myself, so thanks.
I like that question. Do you believe? Are you willing to believe, or do you now, you know, believe? I had to believe. I could see it. You know, I saw it in the first meeting. Here was people that were sober walking the streets of Philadelphia, and you know, I couldn't walk the streets of any town sober. They could do it. And then when I called that guy up in Rhode Island, he was sober enough to man the telephone on Sunday evening. Could have been watching a football game or something or whatever. And he was sober enough to lend me his higher power, you know. And you ask me now if it works, I got to tell you, the first 2 years, if I had heard in those first 2 years some of the things I hear at meetings today, I wouldn't be here. 90 and 90 hadn't been formed yet. Yeah. I spent New Year's Eve in Hong Kong, sober. I'd never been in Hong Kong sober before that. You know, but I spent the following New Year's Eve, I was in and out of Ilongapo in the Philippines. Now, anybody that's been around the Navy for any length of time knows Ilongapo was probably the drink in a city in the Far East. I used to have a friend who died drunk, committed suicide, but he used to tell me anybody can stay sober in Ilongapo can stay sober anywhere. And, you know, I couldn't never stay sober myself. I couldn't do it. If I could, I wouldn't need you people. I wouldn't be here. But that guy's higher power, the one he loaned me, worked. And it kept me sober those 2 years. I was in, what, four different states, three foreign countries, and 10 months on a carrier. And that carrier had one other AA board who was in a different squadron than I was in, and we worked different hours, so we didn't get together very often at sea. But, you know, it got me through a whole lot. And then it got me through the good times, but more important, it got me through the bad times. I've heard people say, and this is probably off the topic, but I got to
do it.
Okay. I've heard many, many people say, you know, my worst day sober is better than my best day drunk or something like that. My best day sober is better, whatever it was. Anyway, I got to thinking about that. I was drunk when I met the lady I soon married a few years later. I was drunk when we got married. I was drunk when my son was born and when both my daughters were born. And those are pretty good days. I was sober when my father died. I was sober when my older sister died. I was sober 2 months later when my brother died. When my wife had a massive stroke, I was sober in 6 years of her caregiver. I stayed sober when my younger sister died, and I was sober 2 years ago when my wife died. I couldn't do that on my own power. There is no way in the world I could stay sober in those ways without a higher power. Going to meetings, to me, would not do it. I proved that when I was 10 and a half years sober. I was out of work. I was making 2 or 3 meetings a day, running with another alcoholic, trying to help him out, you know. We're making the meetings and this and that and the other. And somewhere in the back of my mind, I have figured, well, if I'm working with another drunk, that's what they say to do, and I'll go making a lot of meetings, that's what they say to do. I don't need to do my 10th and 11th steps so much anymore. And I put them on the back burner. And I got home from a noon meeting one afternoon. I sat on the bed, the house was empty, thank God, and I cried like a baby because I was right back where I had been before I went to the hospital the first time. And I thought about the options of what I could do. I took a quarter out of my pocket. Heads, I go up to the liquor store. Tails, I go back to the Easy Does It. You know, the options were there. I knew what was going to happen either way. Both were temporary. Flipped the quarter, right? Heads, over. Damn thing hit the ceiling, bounced off, went in the cushions of the couch. Somebody bought that thing from Salvation Army and got the quarter out of the cushions because I got disgusted and didn't do either one. But I realized, you know, eventually why I was doing wrong. I wasn't depending on a higher power. I was depending on me. And don't depend on me for anything. I'm surprised David depended on me to show up tonight. Anyway, that's all I got. Thank you, David.
How do you feel about meeting makers make it?
Oh, jeez. Meeting makers make meetings.
Yeah. We're going to continue on page 52. We had to ask ourselves why we shouldn't apply to our human problems the same readiness to change our point of view. We were having trouble with personal relationships. We couldn't control our emotional natures. We were prey to misery and depression. We couldn't make a living. We had a feeling of uselessness. We were full of fear. We were unhappy. We couldn't seem to be a real help to other people. Was not a basic solution to these bedevilments more important than whether we would see newsreels of lunar flight? Of course it was. When we saw others solve their problems by a simple reliance upon the spirit of the universe, we had to stop doubting the power of God. Here's a couple simple sentences. Our ideas did not work, period. But the God idea did, period. Adita?
So you mentioned David was dependent or thought you would show up. He didn't have that kind of trust in me. He sent me a text about 10 minutes before the meeting. You are showing up, right? So the bedevilments here, this paragraph is I got years to go before maybe he'll trust me. These bedevilments, these were all true for me. Every single one of these was true for me at the end of my drinking. But more importantly, every single one of these things has been true for me in sobriety when I'm not doing this program. I have come back to this paragraph and relived it in sobriety, and it sucks because I don't have the quick, instantaneous solution of alcohol to take all these things away, which really it doesn't take any of them away. It just obliterated it for a little while, and then I'd wake back up to these same issues. I feel like when I'm not doing the program, when I'm not doing the steps, when I'm not seeking that higher power, working on that relationship with a higher power, which happens for me through the work of these steps, working with other guys, being on the phone, getting to meetings, doing my prayer and meditation, all the things I'm supposed to do. When I drift away from that, and I do drift, I am hard-headed or just a slow learner or I don't know what, or just forgetful, but I will drift. And these things will start to happen again. But like my old sponsor used to say, it's a self-correcting program. I'm going to drift like that, and one of two things is going to happen. I'm either going to drink again, or I'm going to come back and start doing this again. And that's been the case for me. The idea of when we saw others solve their problems with this reliance on a spirit of the universe, I remember coming into the program and getting to these steps 2 and 3, and I would go to other people. I would come to meetings a little early and try and grab somebody that had some time and ask them what did their higher power look like? What was God like? What huge questions. Hey, you got 10 minutes before a meeting? What's God? That... You know, I realized was something that I had to, it wasn't something to be understood. It was, all of this isn't something to be known or understood. It's an experiential thing. But I remember at some point, and I've said this to other guys as well, everybody in this room is sober, which is pretty significant in and of itself, whether it's a day or 40 some years. That's pretty awesome. That to me is evidence of a higher power. But secondly, a lot of these people are all saying that it is through this God idea that they're sober. And so either they're all lying to me, or there might be something to that. And I know my ideas don't work. I've repeatedly tried that. And so by the time I get to this point, I'm broken down enough to try other ideas. And this God idea, which everybody in the room is saying has been the thing that has them where they are, is seems like a good enough reason to try. And that's it.
Thanks, Abita.
I think I've pretty much made the point that I got about higher power, but you asked me, you know, meeting makers make it. You ever ask the slipper when he comes back, you know, what'd you do? What happened? How come you slipped? 9 times out of 10, if not more often than that, they're going to tell you, I quit going to meetings. Now, if meetings are, you know, why? Why did you quit going to meetings? What were you doing besides going to meetings? And I've asked people that. What were you doing besides going to meetings? Well, I called my sponsor. You know, so what? Did you work the steps? Did you say your prayer in the morning? Did you trust your higher power? Well, you know, I was going to meetings, and I quit. The first person I met when we pulled into Subic Bay was a loner named Howard. He had been 8 years without a face-to-face AA contact. And that guy had a program like you wouldn't believe. And like I say, anybody that can stay sober in a long pool can stay sober anywhere. He did a lot of 12-step work. And finally, 3 months before I got there, one of them took. And he had himself a pigeon. And he was in his high glory because he had somebody else. He could talk to AA with somebody else that understood. But can you, I went a couple of months without meetings. And I went to 10 months on that ship without meetings. But it had to take a higher power to get Howard through that 8 years. And today, I correspond with people around the world that don't get to meetings. And every one of them says the same thing. They trust in their higher power. Some of them, doesn't matter who or what you believe in or what I believe in, as long as you have the trust and the faith that it's going to work, it'll work. That's all I got. Thank you.
Thank you. We're gonna hit Appendix 2, I think. Most of us think this awareness of a power greater than ourselves is the essence of spiritual experience. Our more religious members call it God consciousness. Most emphatically, we wish to say that any alcoholic capable of honestly facing his problems in the light of our experience can recover, provided he does not close his mind to all spiritual concepts. He can only be defeated by an attitude of intolerance or belligerent denial. We find that no one need have difficulty with the spirituality of the program. Willingness, honesty, and open-mindedness are the essentials of recovery, but these are indispensable. Dita?
I like the, it just lays it out there. Willingness, honesty, and open-mindedness are the essentials of recovery. I don't really know that that's, I don't know, maybe it's listed elsewhere like that, but it's just given as a list right there. These are the essentials for recovery. It's just, boom, these three things. That's pretty cool. All right. I came in and I was willing. I did have that, willing to try something different because I'd run out of all of my own ideas. honest, I was as honest as I could be at the time. My honesty has improved over time. but I was also open-minded. I had to be. I was broken enough that I had to be open to something else. I'm glad I didn't have the attitude of intolerance or belligerent denial. Because just as it gives me the three things that I need as the essentials of recovery, it also tells me the only two things that are going to keep me from recovery. I think that's great, just in those couple sentences. And the first sentence from this part of the reading was, most of us think this awareness of a power greater than ourselves is the essence of a spiritual experience. So it's such a brilliant thing to say. It's just the awareness of that power that is the connection that I need for that spiritual experience. I'm so brilliant that I saw that and shared it with my sponsor. He shared it with me, and it's like a sentence we've talked about, and it's and I love that. It's just anytime I'm running the show, anytime I'm doing life the way I want to do it or trying to get the things I want, the question comes up, like, where's God in all that, right? So all I have to do is all of a sudden think about God, or how am I doing God's will, or is this, where is my higher power in this thing that I want or this story that I'm trying to create or whatever. All I need to do is bring that awareness, and all of a sudden, everything changes. And that's just my personal experience with that. And but I'd say that's pretty great to try out. I was just reminded of this story as we're talking about this. Was when I was drinking, there was a time me and a friend went out to a party out in West Virginia, and this was, I was living in Maryland, and it was pretty late, and we were pretty drunk, and I had just smoked a little bit too, and we had to get going. So I gave my friend the keys to my car, and because he was like, I'll drive. I'm like, totally fine with that. It wasn't very long before I was passed out. I was asleep, and I don't know when or how long this had gone on, but I woke up to the sound of things hitting the car on the front, right? And I come to, and we're in a cornfield, and I look over, and he's asleep too. And so I shake his leg off the accelerator and wake him up, and he's like, where are we at? I'm like, so the thing is, he's like, well, should we back out? I was like, no, we'll go straight. We'll just go straight and we'll come across the road eventually. And we did, and we found our way, you know. The thing is, like, that night, the next day, you know, maybe a normal human being would have been like, oh my God, we can't do that again. But instead, we're like, hey, you won't believe what we did last night, you know, and it's a funny story. But the truth is, like, we could have hit a tree and died. We could have hit another car. We could have run off a bridge. We could have killed other people. Anything could have happened that night. And the fact is that I've got 17 years of stories littered like that through my life. God was taking care of me way longer before I was ever seeking him. And it took me coming here and getting sober and looking back at my life and seeing all those stories and realizing that to actually appreciate that. So with that, I'm done.
Thanks, Abir.
I don't know if I could add anything on that. To the truth, David, I just I was doubtful when I got here. But like I say, it wasn't that I didn't believe. It was that as long as I said I didn't believe, then I wasn't. You know, if I believed in the God that I was taught, I was in a world of trouble for some of the misdeeds I'd done. But as long as I didn't believe in him, then he couldn't touch me. And, you know, that worked for a while. But they say, you know, my head's got to believe what my eyes see. And I look around this room right now, and I see sober people that say they couldn't stay sober without the help of a higher power. I believe it. I believe it because my eyes see it. What brought home to me about the spiritual thing, it's another sea story, as opposed to a fairy tale which starts at once upon a time. You know how sea stories start. This ain't.
You're not going to believe this.
Yeah. No, this ain't no. Anyway. Got into Singapore and called a fellow that had his number out of the World Directory, and we called him, and he wasn't too healthy. He was in poor health, but he invited me up to his house, and I spent the day at his house. And we talked, hey, this and that and the other, and we got around to the higher power thing, and I says, you know, I believe there's something, but I'm not too sure yet if I can put my will and my life into the hands of something I can't see. And he says, well, you know, have you ever flown an airplane? I said, yeah, a lot. Back and forth cross country a lot of times. He said, well, when you get on that airplane, you know for a fact that you're going to get where you're going in one piece on time, right? I said, yeah. You ever see the pilot? I said, no. He says, when you go to a doctor or a corpsman or whatever you go to in the Navy and they stick a needle in your arm or somewhere else, do you know what he's putting into you? I said, no, but you put your life into their hands, don't you? Yeah. He says, why can't you do it with somebody that keeps you sober? He was right. He's right. I don't have to see to believe. I see the results.
That I believe. And I saw it in my first meeting. I see it here tonight. I see results. And with that, back to you.
Thank you. Thank you both. We are going to pass the seventh tradition basket. The seventh tradition states that every AA group ought to be self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, local services, district area, and general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose to help the alcoholic who still suffers. The amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world. We may want to remember that a dollar does not support as many services as it used to. Are there any announcements for the good of AA?
Oh, yes. Hi. This is our alcoholic.
Iran.
Wakeful Campfire Conference. Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Speakers, meetings, food, volleyball, campfire, toast. Oh, my. You can come at $70 for the whole weekend or $20 per day. If you're interested, please see me after the meeting. Or you can go to wakefieldcampfireconference.com.
Who's cooking?
People.
They will overfeed you, I promise. Anybody else? Announcements? Ain't them young people doing anything?
My name's Melissa. I'm an alcoholic. My home group, Westside Young and Sober, is co-hosting a workshop on service with District 14 on October 29th, Tuesday night. The potluck dinner at 6:30, and the panel will start at 7:30. We've got three panelists covering area service, intergroup level service, and district level service. So if you want to get an idea of what is out there beyond the home group, please come and join us. We are right up the street at Trinity Presbyterian, across from Stella and Cookins. It's Tuesday, October 29th at 6:30.
Awesome. We have some flyers for that event up here on the steps as well. Any other announcements? Newcomers, you are the reason we are here. Is there anybody in their first 30 days of sobriety? We would just like to welcome you by first name.
Pat.
Hey, Pat. Welcome.
Welcome, Matt.
Max. Max. Welcome, brother.
Hi, Margaret.
Yeah.
Welcome.
Welcome.
Anybody else? All right. There is literature available. It's kind of on the stairs over here. Just please knock us all over and go get some. Simple Actions is a home group, by the way. If you're interested in joining our home group, please see one of us after the meeting, home group members. Sponsorship. Sponsorship in Alcoholics Anonymous is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, I will be available at this table after we close the meeting. Please feel free to come and talk to me. Reminders. Smokers, please use the butt can provided outside and stay well away from the church doors. All meeting audio recordings and upcoming events are posted on our website, simpleactions.net. In closing, could we thank our wonderful panel for sharing the night?
Thank you.
Thank you. Really delightful. After we clean up, all are invited and encouraged to continue the conversation on the step discussed tonight at the meeting after the meeting, which will be held at Plaza del Sol, 22nd and Colonial. Okay, if you go down Colonial, past 21st Street, if you hit the railroad tracks, you've gone too far, man. Yeah, just before the railroad tracks. 22nd and Colonial, Plaza del Sol, Mexican, dirt cheap, and we'll be there. It'll be fun. Come on. Seriously. Really. Anybody want to read the last two paragraphs on page 164? I know I'm a little squirrely tonight. I'm sorry. Anybody? All right. Adita, would you read the last two paragraphs?
I will read the last two paragraphs. Oh, I was just volunteering. 164.
Voluntold.
Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
All right.
Thanks.
Shall we pray?